company. Let me just state for the record that my name is Carl Cox. I'm appointed as hearings officer with authority to conduct this hearing and make a determination in this matter. Today is April 29th, 2021. This is file Z0043-21-C. It's a application for a conditional use. I'm going to turn this hearing over to the county to provide an explanation for participation via Zoom, and then we'll resume the hearing. Please
All right,
proceed.
thank you. I'm Clay Glasgow, planning staff here with Darcy. She's our moderator today, and she's going to be looking for your raised hands, which you don't need to put up yet. I'm going to read a required Zoom script, and what this will do is describe the process a little bit better and hopefully answer some of your process questions. I'm going to read it verbatim. Give me about a minute and a half, and we'll get through this. So, Clackamas County is abiding by social distancing requirements during the coronavirus pandemic, so this public hearing will be conducted virtually using the Zoom platform. Panelists for today's hearing, which include the hearings officer, county staff, and the applicant, have both audio and video capability. Audience members who have joined the meeting will have their mics muted unless they wish to testify, in which case they will be called upon to do so by the county staff moderator, that's Darcy. Audience members' video will not be turned on at any time. Today's hearing is being recorded as required by law. The county will make every effort to post the recording on the county website as soon as possible. There is a designated time during this hearings process when it will be open for testimony. The hearings officer will make it clear when this is. If you would like to provide testimony, you will utilize the raise hand. There's enough of us here to where we ask that you use that if you can find it. When the moderator switches you over to provide testimony, your screen will look different for just a couple of seconds. Primarily, you will see all participants' cameras, not just the one who is speaking. Staff will call upon you when it is time for you to provide testimony. Be sure to provide your name and mailing address again. Once you have provided your testimony, your microphone will again be muted and your screen will go back to normal. If the record is left open at the end of this hearing, in which we expect it will be, just as a matter of course, we're doing that with these Zoom hearings. And you wish to submit additional written testimony, you can email that written testimony to me or mail it to the planning department. I'm going to put up a slide later in a quick PowerPoint presentation that will have location information for you to do that too. People who testify and provide their mailing address will receive a copy of the hearings officer's written decision. If you do not wish to testify but would still like to receive the decision, please provide your email or standard mailing address by emailing me or contacting the planning department. I think that's it. And I'm going to give it back to the hearings officer. Thanks.
Thank you. Again, my name is Carl Cox, and I am a private attorney appointed by Clackamas County Board of Commissioners as hearings officer with authority to conduct this hearing and make a determination in this matter. This is a quasi-judicial land use hearing, which means two important things for those participating in this hearing. First, all of the criteria that can be used in reaching a decision have been identified in the staff report. Testimony, arguments, and evidence must be directed towards the criteria identified in the staff report or other relevant criteria found in the comprehensive plan or other land use regulation that the person believes applies to this decision, Accordingly, please direct your testimony to a relevant approval criterion. Second, failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the decision maker and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue may preclude appeal to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals on that issue. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the local government or its designee to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Once final, this decision may be appealed to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. I've received no ex parte contact in this matter, which means that no one contacted me outside of these proceedings in order to try to persuade me concerning a fact or matter which will be at issue today. I've considered issues of bias or conflict of interest and have found that I don't have any bias or personal conflict of interest whatsoever in this matter. The county is making a record of the hearing. That record is available through the county. The order of proceedings will be that I'll ask the county to begin the hearing by presenting evidence, including testimony, that the county wants me to consider in making a determination. Then I'll provide a similar opportunity to the applicant to present evidence, testimony, any other kinds of matter that the applicant wants me to consider in making a decision. Each party may provide witness testimony, as I stated. So please indicate so, and we'll have someone use that raise hand feature to have audio enabled if they're a witness today. At the conclusion of this period, I may provide an opportunity for rebuttal by either the county or the applicant. Then I will provide a opportunity by members of the general public to provide testimony or commentary that they would like me to consider. And again, I may provide a rebuttal period to that as well. Are there any questions before we begin?
No.
Okay. Please proceed.
All right, I'm going to, I think we all know why we're here, but I'm going to go through the staff report fairly quickly. I've got a little PowerPoint to present. A couple of items before that, though, just so I don't forget later. I happened to be online working last evening and got an email from the applicant, Anna Petras, wondering if she could get a copy of the staff report. She had not received it yet. I don't have any explanation for that, but I just wanted to point out that she did not get the staff report until last evening. I did, you know, of course, send her a copy right away, but for whatever that's worth, I just wanted to get that out there. Also, have received a couple of new items that the hearings officer does not have. The hearings officer received everything in the record about a week ago when the staff report was out, to include the application, any testimony received up to that date. Just yesterday, received two new items, which the hearings officer will get. But just for the record, I've got Exhibit 15 under name Epley. Comments in response to notice, definitely, or generally in opposition. And then what will be Exhibit 16, I got comments from the Beaver Creek CPO, kind of interestingly, which is random, they commented outside their territory regarding this type of use in the RRFF5 zone generally. But just for the record, those are new bits of evidence that came in since the hearings officer got it all and it happened to be just yesterday also. On page 23, there is a cut-paste error. I reference Redland Road rather than Homesteader Road, and that's because I borrowed pieces of this staff report from a different one. I apologize for that. I also found one other typo, not important.
What was the... Oh, you just misnamed a road. I don't think that that's confusing to anyone.
Well, I think probably everybody knew what I meant, and the rest of the finding was correct regarding setbacks. I just wanted to point that out, and I didn't fix it. It's on page 23 under other applicable sections of the ZDO, section 316. I mentioned minimum setbacks 30 feet from the front property line, which runs along South Redland Road. That should be Homesteader. And it now is Homesteader. But that'll be in a corrected version of the staff report that the hearings officer gets.
Okay, thank you.
There's also one other typo that I fixed, but I don't think that's worth mentioning. Let me just fix that so I don't forget. All right, and Darcy gave me options to share my screen. Thank you very much. I'm going to put up a PowerPoint here, and I'm just going to ask Darcy so everybody doesn't have to respond. Can you see this, Darcy? Okay, so the PowerPoint is on the screen. So this is what we're here for today. It's file number Z0043-21-C. This is a conditional use application proposing hosting events as a home occupation. Today's date, there's the time. I'm going to go through this in a little further detail. As far as background, the property, north side of Southwest Homesteader Road at Southwest Wilkin Lane. Rural residential use, about 6 1/4 acres in size. It's approximately square. It's relatively level. This is in an area of rural residential home sites on the north side there, and zoned for rural residential use. I've got a map up here. I hope you can all see it. This kind of brown line, these are the zone boundaries. This is our subject property right here at Homesteader and Wilkin. It's in an area of rural residential farm forest zoning. If you go directly across the road, you're in EFU zoning on larger properties. And those of you who've been following along in the last year or two or several years, this is known as the Polo Grounds property over here, just to orient people. And this is known as the castle. And this happens to have had a home occupation host events approved on that within the last year and a half or so. And as I can't remember exactly when, but it's that house with a kind of two turrets right up front. It looks pretty cool from Homesteader Road. Today, we're looking at this property right here. Let me get an aerial up so you can see it. This aerial is from 2018 and does not show a new building, which is approximately here. This was permitted through the building department as a guest house. It's called something else through this application, but the county permitted it as a guest house to be used for temporary and occasional visitors of the homeowner. Applicant submitted a site plan, which in this format thrown up on a screen really is quite busy, but basically they're doing this to show that the property can support the use. As far as applicable criteria in this case, I've just listed them here. And if you've looked at the staff report, you've seen that I painstakingly went through each one of these. Generally speaking, you've got the underlying zone, which is rural residential farm forest. That's section 316, and those code criteria apply. The main criteria in this case are found in section 1203. That's Clackamas County Zoning Ordinance, section 1203. That deals with conditional use. All these other sections are pulled in through section 1203. That code section has six criteria, all of which must be met. If even one fails, it has to be denied. If all are met, it has to be approved. I'm going to go through those six criteria very quickly here. Now, when it's your turn to speak, if anybody has any questions about the staff report or the process or anything, please ask. We want this to be as understandable and open as possible. And I just kind of go through this because I've been working on it. I've talked to people. I've done the staff report. It's all in my head. And I sometimes forget that not everybody has been living and breathing this like I have. But I'm going to go through the six conditional use criteria very quickly. The first criterion, the applicant needs to show and the county needs to find that the proposed use is, in fact, allowed in the underlying zone. In this case, the underlying zone is rural residential farm forest. And the RFF5 zone, that table 316-1, lists allowed uses in that zone. And as a potential conditional use, lists something called home occupations to host events. That's what this proposal involves, is a home occupation to host events. So this first criterion is met because the use is listed as a conditional use in the underlying zone. The second criterion I listed, well, the number B, the applicant needs to show the characteristics of the site itself are suitable for the proposed use, considering a variety of dimensional standards, infrastructure availability, other improvements, that kind of thing. Basically, you've got to, or the applicant needs to show that if you isolate this property in space all by itself, it can support this use. This is about 6.25 acres in size, give or take. It's roughly square in shape. It's got plenty of frontage along Homesteader. It's got existing improvements on it. There's no particular natural features. I was able to find, obviously staff reports got a lot of words and whatnot, but I was able to find in favor of this second criterion. So the second criterion is met. Third one, needs to be shown the proposed development is consistent with what we call subsection 10707, safety of the transportation system is adequate to serve the proposed development. Basically, what this deals with is transportation concurrency and safety. Concurrency applies generally to conditional uses, and generally speaking, the applicant needs to show that the road network that's proposed to serve this use is adequate to serve this use. In this particular case, with home occupation and host events, the use is exempt from the concurrency requirement simply because of the type of traffic. This isn't like you're putting in a new McDonald's, which is going to have, fairly constant traffic. This is a different kind of traffic. It's very episodic. There's either nothing or everybody showing up and everybody leaving all at once. Regardless, it's exempt from the concurrency requirement. It is not exempt from the safety requirement. Asked for and received comments from our transportation development staff. They're included in detail within the staff report. Basically, that's a long way of saying I was able to find in favor of this third criterion, number C also. So the first three are met. Fourth criterion, and this is oftentimes the most interesting one. The proposed use will not alter the character of the surrounding area in a manner that substantially limits, impairs, or precludes the use of surrounding properties for the primary uses allowed in the zoning district in which the surrounding properties are located. This is located in a rural residential zoning district. It's a 5-acre minimum lot size now for any new lots. There's a variety of size properties in this zone section. I'm going to throw back this map here. You've got a variety of size properties in this rural residential zoned area. Across the street, you've got EFU, exclusive farm use, that allows farm uses outright, not residential. Let me go back to this here. Now, oftentimes, and all the time, I bring this up in the staff report, when we're looking at an application, the use is still in the proposal stage. So impacts are, you know, still in the, you know, imaginary state. And it's kind of hard for people to consider and comment directly on things like traffic and noise because they haven't had experience yet. In this case, the use commenced prior to getting conditional use approval. It comes to us through the code compliance department via a complaint, a violation. And many events apparently have been held on this property. So the area residents, landowners have direct experience with this particular use as far as impacts. And we've received actually many comments for this, written email comments on this, a couple in favor, but generally speaking, most have been in opposition and most deal with, again, not perceived impacts, but actual impacts, particularly traffic, noise, and just general increase in activity on this rural residential zone, lighting on this rural residential zone property that the commenters feel, in fact, are having do substantially limit, impair, or preclude the use of surrounding properties for the primary residential use in the zoning district. That basically the peace in the valley has been altered significantly by this use. I was not able to find in favor of that one. Number E, the fifth one, you got to show the proposal satisfies goals and policies to the comprehensive plan, which applies to the proposed use. The applicant briefly touched on these. I briefly touched on them in a staff report. The plan calls this area of the county rural residential. That's why it's zoned that way. I talked briefly about those policies from the plan, also transportation policies and public facilities and services. Was able to find in favor here. Final criterion, the sixth one, requires that the proposed use comply with the applicable requirements of the underlying zoning district, that's rural residential farm forest, and any overlay districts which apply here, which in this case is section 806. Of the Clackamas County Zoning Ordinance, which deals specifically with home occupations to host events. This code section is mostly a list of limitations as far as number of events, body count per events, traffic, parking requirements, that sort of thing. And I was able to find the proposal can meet this one also. So it's really this one that I think needs discussion here as far as impacts on the area that has elicited much response from the area. Residents, we've got people in attendance today, many of whom I assume will want to testify. And with that, I think I'm going to quit droning on. Let me put this up here really quick. If anybody's going to be submitting testimony after this meeting, which may be the case, you can either mail it in to us at the planning department. We're at 150 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, 97045. Be helpful if you put the file number or name on it, it would just get to me faster. Or, and what I'd suggest you do, just email it to me. I get tons of email anyway, and I always respond. I'm at clayg@clackamas.us, and that's probably the best way to get information to me. And with that, I'm going to, I'm frozen up again, Darcy. Hang on a minute. Nope, I got it. I wanted to, Yeah, with that, I think I'm going to close my discussion. And if anybody has any questions now or at any point in this process, please raise your hand and ask. And if Mr. Cox, hearings officer, has any questions now, fire away.
I do. First, let's go back to the address there. That would be if you're going to, your proposal is back up. I mean, your presentation.
There we go.
Use the raise hand feature if you intend to provide additional commentary or written statements to the county for my consideration after today's hearing, so I can have an idea if that's if individuals are planning on doing that. We have one. Yes. So what I am going to do is just...
Yes, there's one hand up.
Okay. So I'll make a statement right now that I asked that question because I need to make a determination about how long to keep the record open. And I will state for the people who are participating in the hearing that I will keep the record open for a week, 7 days after today, for the submission of those types of written comments that can be emails to Mr. Glasgow or to the address, mailed to the address that was provided. I will provide the county and the applicant a similar 7-day period to provide a response and an additional 7-day period for the applicant and county to provide a rebuttal to one another's response. Is that clear? Okay, so a total of 21 days from today. Okay, I think everyone's had an opportunity to write down that contact information. At this time, I'd like to provide the applicant an opportunity to provide testimony or written statement concerning the application.
I'll go ahead and start by saying thank you for everyone's time. And I can just comment on, I've lived in Westland for 18 years. We've always had people over our home, bridal showers, baby showers. You know, I'm involved in the local Romanian church. I direct a youth choir. I have a lot of huge family, 7 brothers and sisters with nieces, nephews. And after moving here to this property in October of 2019, we moved because it was obviously a bigger space. We've lived in a bigger house, but smaller lot. And we always, you know, had people over, never had any complaints or any issues. And we moved here to the larger lot. And it's true, we were excited. We were new to this. And we had a couple of gatherings. And we didn't know what we were doing. We were, you know, we're learning through the process, but we did learn to address the issue of noise right away. Is I want to say that I had already emailed all the neighbors, and there was one particular one that, you know, not knowing, being new, being inexperienced, we allowed speakers outside and the noise was loud and the music was loud. Since then, I emailed the neighbors and I told them we will not be allowing loud music, speakers, dancing, any of that outside. I want to be very much a part of this community. I don't want to come here and be this down looked upon neighbor that is creating issues, creating noise. I don't want to cause any issues or any noise or extra, you know, disturb the peace in the valley. That being said, the prior neighbor, the prior owner prior to us was a single man who owned this house for 2 years, who traveled a lot and he was gone most of the time. So you have 2 years of like no activity in the home. And then we move in October of 2019 and we do have a big family and we do have lots of nieces and nephews and a big community. And people have been used to coming over and, you know, the youth playing volleyball and this and that. And it's like, I want to share my home with people and I want to share my home with and then the scare of the pandemic came in the early of 2020 and everybody was shut down, quiet. No, none of us did anything. It was like April, May, June. But coming August and September, we started opening up our home. And especially in September, and this is again, I think what really threw the neighbors off, and I apologize again, is I have a friend, Ruben, whose wedding was canceled 3 times. First wedding was due to the pandemic. Second time, the bride's dad died. And the third time, their wedding was scheduled for Abernathy Center in Oregon City that was already at level 2 for fires. And they called me on Saturday the day before to host, you know, to host them on Sunday. And I could see why the neighbors were upset, were alarmed, because it was, you know, the smoke and but we would have never, ever made a decision to put the neighbors in jeopardy. We knew that the fires were across the river in Canby. And I just wanted to do something for these people. They were like the third time their wedding got canceled. The family was already in town from California, and that's what I did. And so I can see the neighbors got really alarmed. They saw a bunch of cars. You know, one of the neighbors commented in the email thread that they counted 200 cars. Those are the types of exaggerations from the neighbors that I don't appreciate. I would like transparency, and I would like to absolutely adjust any way, shape, and form. But I have pictures, and I did not have more than like 40, maybe 45 cars on the property. So that's addressing the noise. Definitely, I've put it in the application. I will not have outdoor speakers. I will not allow like dancing or any of that outside loud music. I want to be respectful. All of our events are from 3 p.m. Usually by 9 p.m., it's done. It's quiet. And that there again, that was that one incident where there was speakers outside. And I was like, that's it, shut down. That's when Megan, one of the neighbors, came in and said, you know, this is noisy. And again, that one incident, I said, I'm sorry, I apologize to the neighbors. But these are things that I can fix, and I can put, you know, I can be within the code. I don't want to be a noisy neighbor. I don't want to cause traffic. And that's another thing I want to address, since it's within the same, is I have a long driveway. So when I have people come over, on the day they come over, I have my gates are open, and people come into the driveway. They never ever stage on the street. We've never caused traffic on the street because they turn into our driveway and then they keep coming, and the parking is far away. So it's not like they have to wait on the street for people to come in. So that should not be an issue. If you look at this aerial shot from Homesteader, you come into the driveway and there's plenty of space. And we've always had my husband or my son or people, like, you know, taking in the traffic. Again, I want to, you know, reiterate, because Clay was saying that normally you guys approve these based on proposed potential noise, and the neighbors' comments have all been because, you know, the existing noise. And I've addressed that right away. Being new and excited, we're on this property, you know, I didn't know what to do, what not to do, but I know now not to allow speakers outside, not to have the loud music. I've emailed all the neighbors, I've apologized. And regarding coding, I don't know if Eddie wants to, just one more comment. Cause again, like Clay said, I only got the staff report last night because I didn't know it existed, and Eddie mentioned it to me. So I read it. And if you look on page 16, it talks about the noise and traffic. And then it says it's two of the submitted sets of comments question why the applicant has been allowed to hold large events during the pandemic. But the one I want to point out is the another comment that noted a large bonfire associated with an event last week in the midst of a highly publicized. What I want to say with that too, again, I want to be transparent with the neighbors, and I do not appreciate exaggerations. And for them to say that large bonfire associated with an event is complete false. We've been gathering wood just like everybody else in the neighborhood from the ice storm so we can burn. At the same time, we were doing the burn, not a bonfire, was not an event. There was two other fires across the street. So I feel at this point like the neighbors are just out to like get something to complain about. But I'm here to be a good neighbor. We did not have a bonfire event. It is open burn season. The firefighters actually came and he saw we had the hose out. My son was out there with the excavator tending to the fire. I think maybe we had a couple of my nieces and nephews over, but it was definitely not a bonfire event. And the firefighter said everything was fine. And there was two fires going on across the street. Everywhere you drive in West Lynn, people are burning. So it's okay for the neighbors, please, you know, comment, let me know what I can do, what I can change, what I can, you know, I have this big barn on my property. I would like to be able to have, you know, bridal showers, baby showers. Like I had a bigger house than this. My house used to be 5,400 square feet. This is 4,500 square feet plus the big barn. And I had over 200 teenagers over. In 18 years, never, ever anybody has complained. Another thing is like, I don't want the neighbors to live like me or expect their lifestyle to be like me. But I also don't want them to take that away from me. If I am the type of person that opens my home and invites people over and I want them to enjoy this property, I want to be respectful of the noise level. I'm happy from now on to host all of the neighborhood gatherings. Every year when you guys have the Christmas gatherings, I haven't been able to participate because I'm pretty new. I would love to have you guys over and gather in the barn. I'm not here to disrupt the neighborhood and cause any sort of noise. And yes, you guys are right. We were a little bit overly excited to have the property. And once things kind of started opening up in the summer of August and September, but there's things that I've addressed right away. And I definitely know what to do to cut out the noise regarding the speakers. One more thing I'm going to say, and with that, I lost my train of thought. Sorry. Go ahead.
I have a couple of questions, Anna, if you don't mind. As far as number of guests, I know this is an estimate, but the estimate is different at different places in the application. It's anywhere from 100 to 120 to 150. What do you think the average guest count's going to be?
100 max. Oh, okay. This is what I was going to say. Speaking of max, I've applied for 15 events per year, and some of the neighbors that I talk to think that is excessive from the out of 365 days a year that we have. What I want to say to the neighbors and the people that are on listening, which I didn't get a chance to say in the emails to you guys, is 15 is the max. Like the city told me to apply for what I think the max is. I can reduce that. That's not a problem. What I want to say to that is my husband and I travel at least 1 month out of the summer. We're gone. We didn't go anywhere last year because of the pandemic, but like everyone around us, we also like our peace and quiet. So I'm not the type of person that will have this as an open running business. I am a successful business person. This is not like I want to do this as a primary thing. I just want to be able to host family, friends, neighbors, you know, maybe like a bigger event here and there. Last year was an emergency situation. Nobody could go gather anywhere. And I was the one that took the chance and opened my doors and allowed people, you know, against all odds. And, you know, I don't want to be here and do this excessively. That's for sure. And I'm not going to disrupt the whole summer. Like I said, we're typically gone at least a month out of the summer. So, yeah.
Can I just one other question? Sorry, Mr. Cox. I'm thinking about it. On the site plan, you show an in-laws quarters to be used as part of this, and that is that what was approved as a guest house? Just for my own.
No, it was not part of this.
Okay, let me look at the site plan here. I'm just wanting to make sure you're showing proposed in-laws. Okay, so you're using or the proposal is to use the barn as well as part of the house, right?
No, just my house. Yeah, house and the barn. So I have a big barn. It's 35 by 35. It's about 1200 square feet. And that is really what my focus is to be able to gather in there, because currently it's permitted as agricultural
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Thanks.
Okay. And thank you for your description of your application. I can see that you're very enthused about your application and want to have a opportunity to obtain this conditional use permit to for your own personal enjoyment is what's obvious, and you want to enjoy the use of your property. And the tension here is going to be with your neighbor's ability to the quiet and peaceful enjoyment of their property as well. So I'll have to weigh those factors and make a determination along with what the county has recommended. Do you have any other information you want to add before I provide an opportunity for members of the general public?
I'd like Eddie to comment on the more of the coding because he's more familiar with the coding.
Yes, my name is Eddie Radulescu. I'm with EPR Design. We do planning, architecture, and engineering. And I just wanted to speak a little bit on the, I'm not going to go through all the approval criteria since, as we've seen in the report and Clay's presentation, the concern was with one, section 1203.01D, and Anna talked about a few of the items in there, but I just want to highlight a couple of things. And I want to start off by reading the actual description of this approval criteria. And it says, explain how the proposed use will not alter the character of the surrounding area in a manner that substantially limits. And I want to just highlight the word substantially. Limits, impairs, or precludes the use of surrounding properties for the primary uses allowed in the zoning district in which surrounding properties are located. What I want to speak about that and why I highlighted substantially is because of a couple of reasons. Number one, the site is over 6 acres. And is if you can, Clay, I don't know if you could put that aerial of the site back up again. I wanted to show one of the reasons why this is allowed as a conditional use in this zoning. And the main factor is that the only place you can really allow something like this is on large properties. I mean, you're not going to go into a subdivision and see somebody applying for a conditional use to host events on 5,000 or 10,000 square foot lots. These are allowed in these areas because they're large home sites. They can accommodate things like multiple people being there at once, parking. Usually the homes and the locations where the events are taking place are set back pretty far from other homes and other properties, which provides the space needed for privacy and for noise. If you look at the aerial, all the sites around this home are large, and the homes are set back pretty far away from the barn and from the home in which these events take place. So I don't think that the proposal itself substantially limits the use of what the neighbors and other surrounding property owners can do from in their daily routines. The other thing I want to mention where this doesn't substantially limit them to use their properties for what they need with regards to traffic, this particular site, the driveway can accommodate two-way traffic. So even if somebody is leaving and people are showing up to the event, nobody has to stage on the road. As Anna testified, that has never happened. There's never been a line staging on Homesteader Road to be able to enter the site. It wouldn't happen because the driveway as existing is wide enough to accommodate two-way traffic. Also, the driveway is so long that she can accommodate all the parking on site. There will never be parking along the street. So that also alleviates any concern with traffic. One other thing I wanted to also mention, and Anna already testified on this, is this is more of something she would like to do and like to to be able to do for her family, for her church, and for her community. She's not advertising. There's no business model associated with this where she's taking out advertising and marketing to really pull in events and profit from this. This is more of something she likes to do for her community and her family and friends. And I'm sure that maybe some people have heard about this. Clay, I know you've probably dealt with this, but there are things in place like good neighbor agreements, which I'm sure she's willing to do or draft. And I know that she's already done that. I mean, she's already been in communication with neighbors. She's given out emails, phone numbers, texts. So there are avenues to where a good neighbor agreement could be put in place where she can document and say, look, I'm not going to allow outdoor music. I'm not going to allow outdoor speakers. I'm not going to allow noise. Everybody has, you know, there could be contact information there. People can call with questions, concerns. She can update people. Hey, I want to let you know on Saturday of June 28th, I'm going to have an event. There's going to be X amount of people, X amount of cars. We're going to be able to accommodate everybody and keep everything safe and quiet. So I believe a good neighbor agreement could be a good solution between Anna and the neighbors for peace of mind. There was one last thing I wanted to say in regards to also that word in the approval criteria of substantially limiting. So she's proposing anywhere from 12 to 15 events per year and up to 100 people. I want to draw everybody's attention to section, there is a code section here that's required to be met as part of a home occupation approval. It's in section 806. I'm just scrolling through here. Let me find that real quick. And I just want to read briefly some of the items in here, which Anna complies with and can comply with in the future. Number one, operator. The operator shall reside full-time in a lawfully established dwelling unit. She lives there, so she's in full control of these events at all times. She establishes rules, number of people, and number of cars that can come to the site. Number two, employees. The home occupation shall have no more than 5 employees. Well, since Anna is usually the host, actually she is the host of all these events, she doesn't need employees. Her husband run everything. Other than if somebody comes in with catering, there's not going to be an excessive amount of employees that are needed. Type of building, notwithstanding the definition of home occupation in section 202, the home occupation shall be operated substantially in the operator's dwelling or other buildings normally associated with uses permitted in the applicable zoning district. So as mentioned, all of the events are going to be limited to her home and to the barn. There's not going to be any outdoor events. Tents, temporary tents are allowed as follows. Although tents are allowed, she's not proposing any outdoor uses or any tents. Impacts on dwellings. In the AG-F, EFU, and TBR districts, the evaluation of compliance with subsection 1203.03D shall include consideration of impacts on dwellings, even though dwellings are not primary uses in these districts. So her property is not in one of those districts, but we've talked about subsection 1203.03D and how she's mitigating for those items in order to not substantially limit the use of the neighbor's enjoyment or property. Hours of operation. So during the months of November through March, no event shall take place outside the hours of 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. During the months of April through October, no event shall take place outside the hours of 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. These time restrictions do not apply to persons involved in the setup or cleanup of facilities. As she mentioned and is also stated in her application, that the events do not go past 9 o'clock. So she is in compliance with this section. Frequency of events. A maximum of two events shall be allowed per day, and no more than one event shall occur at any one time. During the months of November through March, no more than five events shall be allowed per week. During the months of April through October, no more than seven events shall be allowed per week. I would argue that this section in 806, item number seven, I believe that if she was going to have this type of frequency, then I believe we could argue that that would substantially alter the livability of the neighborhood. She is literally proposing 15 events per year, and there will never be more than one event on one day, and a maximum of 100 people, which brings me to item number eight in section 806, guests. The maximum number of guests for any single event is 300. Again, I want to highlight that word substantially. If she was proposing the maximum, which by code in section 806 would be 300 individuals attending, I believe that could probably be argued as substantially, depending on the size of the lot. But I believe that for the amount of acreage, the indoor space that she has to accommodate these people, as well as her home and parking, I don't believe that her application substantially alters the livability of the neighborhood. There is also, I'm going to skip over lighting because the events take place during the day and in the evening, she's not proposing any lighting.
I do have a quick question regarding lighting because Clay mentioned that. I'm confused as to what the issue with the lighting is. We've never had any light except for the turning on the lights in the barn. I'm not understanding because you mentioned lighting is an issue in section 1203.
Well, do you want me to jump in or do you want to keep talking on this, Ms. Radulescu?
Let me finish my thought because I think there's only... I can touch, there's just about three more items and I'll be finished. I just want to highlight these points. So the one I was on was noise. Noise shall be regulated as follows. And this is also item 10 in section 806. And I apologize that I'm reading this. I know it's long, but I just want to make sure that everybody understands what we're looking at when we're dealing with this code criteria from how we perceive it. So noise shall be regulated as follows: from 7 a.m. until 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and until 9 p.m. on all other days of the week. The average peak sound pressure level when measured off the subject property of noise created by the home occupation shall not exceed greater of 16 decibels or the ambient noise level. As Anna said.
16 or 60?
60.
That's correct. Yeah.
So I just want to mention that her events comply with these hours, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday through Saturday and until 9 p.m. on any other day of the week. By her limiting herself to these activities being done indoors, there should not be any noise levels which exceed noise that's normally generated by common outdoor activities. As she mentioned, all of the events are going to be hosted inside her barn, which, as mentioned before, and showing setbacks from that aerial view, it's far away from subject properties that are in its vicinities. I've already talked about parking. This is number 11 on section 806. She has plenty of off-street parking. The requirement for this section is on-street parking shall be prohibited on the day of an event. So her property can accommodate all, or her site can accommodate all of the parking, and there will be no parking on the street. And the last one, Clay, I think you were asking about the use of the in-law suite, I think is what we called it on the permit, but it's actually a guest house. Portable restrooms. So the only other thing that's going to be brought in for her events, and this is out of section 806, number 12, portable restroom. So she does have restrooms in her home, and she can bring in like the sandy cans and things like that. And those all are allowed in here under this section, as long as they're located 50 feet away from all lot lines. And as the aerial showed, her site is large enough to accommodate these, and they'll be removed and brought in on the day of an event. I think the requirement is they cannot be brought in earlier than 24 hours and need to leave within 24 hours of an event ending. The only reason I bring this up is because I just wanted to show that I don't believe that this criterion should have been denied based on the items I went over. I don't believe that what she's proposing and her limited use, I mean, she's proposing a pretty limited use. It's clear that she's just doing this as a way to enjoy her property and to let other people enjoy her property. It's not a business. She's not applying for the maximum. I believe that what she is applying for does not substantially alter the character of the neighborhood or livability to surrounding properties. I think that's everything I wanted to say on that. So if Clay, we can go back to your
question. Thanks. Let me just respond here. For everyone listening, Mr. Radulescu has focused his testimony on the one criterion I was unable to find in favor of. It's 120301 sub D. This is the one where I'm going to read it just so we all know. The proposed use will not alter the character of the surrounding area in a manner that substantially limits, impairs, or precludes the use of those properties for the primary uses allowed in the zoning district. And if you look at the staff report I actually put in there, this criterion does not require the use have no impacts at all, but instead the impacts must not substantially limit, impair, or preclude the use of surrounding properties. Any use on, like, you know, if you have kids outside playing basketball, that's going to have an impact on area property, just noise and activity. This criterion requires that it not substantially impact surrounding properties for the uses that are allowed outright, which in this case is rural residential. And I was not able to find in favor of this one. And it was, again, based mostly on testimony that is based on actual experience with the use. As far as lighting, Anna mentioned that this isn't the county's first rodeo with this type of use. We've had dozens of this kind of hosting events, home occupation applications come before us over the last several years. Not so many in the last 12 months, obviously, but we've looked at this a lot. And, you know, out in the rural area particularly, everything gets magnified. I mean, if you were proposing this in a commercial zone in town, the use, the noise, the lighting, everything would be buffered by existing uses, noise, buildings, traffic. It's just the hubbub wouldn't be so noticeable because it would be just in an area where a lot of stuff is already happening. You put it out in the country and impacts, frankly, are just magnified. Everything is bigger. Noise travels and it's louder and it's more noticeable. Light, particularly at night out there, is very noticeable. And in this case, I'm talking just like headlights from cars are, you know, much more noticeable. If you're moving 50 or 100 cars on and off the site in the dark, that's just a lot of activity, including lights. In this case, the proposal is apparently to hold these events generally indoors, you know, once people get on site, to put them in the barn or in part of the house. So some of these impacts will be mitigated. But again, being out in the country like that, everything is just bigger and louder and brighter than it would be in town, and impacts the area properties more because of that. So I'm not sure if that got to your question, Anna, but I tried with regards to the lights.
Yeah, I was just confused because, I mean, yeah, you turn on your lights in the house, you turn the barn lights on, and yeah, there was no extra lights. People have string lights. I have string lights in my English garden. I mean, I see them everywhere. The castle is lit up across the street. I mean, people have way more lighting than I do around the house. So I'm not sure where that came from, but anyways.
Okay, thank you. That what the applicant wants me to consider before I provide an opportunity for the general public?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. I'd like to provide an opportunity for members of the general public to provide comments for my consideration. You please use the raise hand feature and we'll hear from you.
You see Grant, Darcy?
Yes, I have Grant Bilby. And Grant, if you could please provide your mailing address when you start to speak, that would be great.
Perfect.
Thanks, Darcy. This is Grant Bilby. We reside at 3355 Southwest Homesteader Road. Our property is the property adjacent to the property under consideration on the eastern side.
Right.
So I have a list of points that I'd like to walk through that came up from the testimony of Mrs. Petras and also from Eddie, just in regards to some of the statements made. So in the past 12-month period that we're looking at, so from June of 2020 to current, April of 2021, we have observed no less than 19 events held on this property, the first being the 14th of June of 2020. And a large majority of these events do occur either outside the barn and house dwelling or are combined between the barn and outside. So that is something we've observed. In reference to the statements about the burns, there have been two observed nighttime burns from our property. And again, we are directly adjacent to the property. We are farther up the hill, so we have direct line of sight to the property in question. So there have been two nighttime burns well past sundown that are of some concern for us. I would actually be in perfect agreement with Mrs. Petras that there are others who are also burning at night as well in the valley. And I take exception to that as well, because I believe they should also not be doing that. But that is a conversation for another time. There's been at least one recorded event of fireworks being lit off on the property. There's been at least one recorded event where traffic was significantly impeded along Homesteader Road. This was the result of a stretch vehicle attempting to negotiate the tight corner into the property. And this was observed by us and other neighbors as well. One of the large concerns we have for these types of events, beyond just the stated effects that us and others have provided in written testimony about how it impacts the overall nature of the surrounding area, and I'll get to that in a second, is during the events of the fires south and east of this area, when the air quality was very, very hazardous. I believe that the AQI from the Environmental Protection Agency was measured at 350 or above. There were at least two events that were recorded. This was September 12th, 2020, and September 16th, 2020. September 12th, the event in question, the AQI at the time was over 350, which at that point says you should not even be outside. Event staff and attendees were outside on property for both the 12th and the 16th. The concern, though, is that at that point, we were in a level 2 evacuation warning for the fires, meaning that a significant shift in wind or other factors could have seen us needing to evacuate the area. And having large events with non-trivial amounts of cars all trying to leave at the same time significantly impairs the ability for residents in the area, as well as the attendees, to be able to get out safely. And this is a concern that we have. As for the noise and the testimony provided by Eddie, again, living on the property adjacent and in the valley, you need to understand that because the property in question sits at the bottom of the valley, sound carries throughout the entire surrounding area. And there have been more than one events where sound amplification does carry all the way up and has carried past 9 p.m. So my wife is actually telling me previous, but we were at a level 1 evacuation zone, not level 2, but still something that was concerning at the time. So there are a number of instances where I would feel the overall nature of the surrounding area. I believe what we're referencing as the 1203-03D, the character, has been substantially impacted. And I believe our provided testimony and the testimony of others in the area speaks to that as well. I am very aware of all of the maximum allowances for conditional use for home occupancy, as we went through a similar proceeding with the castle across the way just this past year. And I seem to recall, even with that, there were significant considerations that had to be taken by the castle before a conditional use permit was even considered, let alone approved. And that is for a zone that was actually zoned for that usage. I'm not trying to engender animosity between us and the other residents of the property, but I will say that, again, as people who have moved to this area with certain thoughts about what this area entails, having what amounts to commercial event space directly across, regardless of whether or not this is the actual intention or the official business usage, the result remains the same, that there are or have been more than even the allotted number of events or requested number of events per year already occurring during this time. Again, where large events have been largely discouraged because of COVID, and having that additional pressure in the valley, in addition to the noise and the traffic and the concerns about fires and other activities going on, we feel that there is a substantial and significant impact to the overall character of the property, especially with us being so close to the property in question.
Thank you, sir. I will take your comments and your testimony concerning your experience as the direct adjacent neighbor into consideration. Is there another member of the public that wants to provide commentary or testimony?
I have Ruthie Zimmerman. And Ruthie, please be sure to provide your mailing address when you're moved over. Thank you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So my name is Ruthie Zimmerman, and I live across the street. My address is 3720 Southwest Homesteaders, so I'm on one of the EFU properties almost directly across the street from the property in question. And I just want to say, I know I understand kind of everybody's perspective on this. I mean, our experience, I think the neighborhood's experience with the polo fields was something that was really challenging. And I think that it has colored a lot of our feelings as a neighborhood toward any kind of event space. I think what is different to me with this property and this space is, and I also come from a large family and have a large family, so I completely understand wanting to enjoy your home and share it with your family and have people over for events. And when I say event, I mean, you know, if you have family over and you have a large family, it can seem like an event when really it's the same thing as having your parents over or having your siblings over. If you have 7 siblings, it turns into something that someone with a smaller family might not consider, you know, just a family gathering, but they might call it an event. So I think from my perspective, that's where I have a little more grace for these types of things. I completely get wanting to share your space and agree that, you know, if you have a larger family, sometimes there's noise. It's having somebody who's active on a property is different than having a neighbor who doesn't do anything. And so I think just having a different type of family, a different type of person can alter the neighborhood feel, but not necessarily in a detrimental way. It's just a different kind of activity, a different kind of life. I think the things that I wanted to say that I've appreciated so far, and I don't know if it necessarily goes to code, but I appreciate that it's not a commercial venture. It's something, you know, at least from what I've heard, and Anna has been very communicative with the neighbors, which I've appreciated, open line of communication. I absolutely, Eddie, what you said about maybe good neighbor agreement, I think something like that could be really helpful just to make everybody feel comfortable, but, you know, kind of outlining some of the things that Anna has said, you know, not having alcohol on, you know, at things that are considered events, you know, not having speakers, just letting people know in advance if there's going to be something larger happening so people can be aware of that and prepare for that. I think all of those things are really helpful. I've also, at least found in my experience, and I don't know if it's everybody's experience, but I found Anna to be very receptive to feedback from neighbors, which I've personally appreciated because I know when people had issues with the polo field, I don't know if they were allowed to do those events or not, but, you know, when they got feedback from neighbors saying, it's so loud when you point the speakers up at Mountain, could you please stop? The feedback was kind of like, well, we can do what we want. We don't really care about how it impacts you. And that's not the experience I found with Anna. So all that to say, you know, I think I have a little more, you know, tolerance for these types of things coming from a larger family. But from what I've seen, it's not, you know, they're not big events. It's, you know, someone having their family over and learning from those experiences how to be a good neighbor and what impacts other properties. And I've appreciated that she's taken that feedback into consideration and, you know, modified some of her events because of it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your participation, and I will consider your comments. Do we have another member of the general public?
We have, I have a Tracy.
And we have a last name and spelling and address for Tracy.
My name is Tracy Sitton. I live at 3035 Southwest Homesteader Road, about three or four properties down from Anna. And I would like to go on the record in support of her. I have absolutely no objection to her conditional use permit. I've lived here for more than 20 years. And based on what she is proposing, I see no adverse impact on our neighborhood. I can't understand why she wouldn't be allowed to host her family and friends at her own home. She's been a wonderful addition to this community. She's gracious, considerate. She's been transparent, accommodating, polite. During the ice storm, her family was one of the first to jump in and help clear the fallen trees off Homesteader so we could all get in and out. I personally think it will be nice to see a little life happening around us after having lived through this pandemic. Joyful gatherings and celebrations should be welcome. So I hope you approve her permit. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to clarify, your spelling was S-I-T-T-O-N?
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there, and I will consider your statements and testimony as well. Do we have another member of the public?
I have Marie Van Patten.
Can you hear me now?
There you are.
Hi. So my husband's actually sitting here next to me. I'm Marie Van Patten. His name is John Alexi. And our address is 3737 Southwest Homesteader Road. We live directly next door. I would like to echo much of what the previous person just said. She actually reached out when this went into into the county. She sent her proposal in and invited anyone who wanted to discuss their issues or concerns with her. She invited me to her home and sat me down in her living room and wanted to hear everything that I was concerned about. And I thought that was very gracious and very fair. I'm also feeling like the number of events is reasonable. If it's stretched out over the normal time of the year when you would be able to hold events that were partially outside, it doesn't amount to that many events, number one. Number two, she's promised not to do alcohol, not to do PA systems, not to do dances, to be done by 9 o'clock and have all the organizers off the property by 10. We have not been horribly bothered by the level of noise. Perhaps we're more tolerant than some, but I found her to be a kind neighbor who reaches out to others to help them. I also noticed that she came out to clear, her family was out clearing the road immediately after the ice storm. She has listened to my concerns about other things on her property that were a problem for us, namely some pigs, and has agreed that that's not the greatest idea. And she's getting rid of the pigs because they really smell bad and they're right next to my fence. So I just wanted to say, I feel like Anna's trying really hard to live within the rules from the county and also is listening to the concerns of everyone who has sent out messages in the email strings and is concerned about some of the issues. And she's tried very hard to address every single one of those issues. I would like to offer my support for her proposed use of the property. And if my husband would like to speak also, I'm going to let him do that now.
So my name is John Alexi. Technically, I actually live right next door.
J-O-H-N?
J-O-H-N, correct. A-L-E-X-Y.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
That's fine. A-L-E-X-Y, like Alex with a Y on the end.
Thank you.
And so there's actually a flag lot between us. So there's a driveway. So there's about a 10-foot corridor between our property and theirs for the back lot behind her. But I was actually, working on my deck all summer. And, when a bunch of these events were happening, it was the deck in my front, which we were just replacing a small section because a tree fell or, damaged it, basically. So I was out actually in the neighborhood listening. We're probably 400 feet away from the house, maybe less. And I didn't find anything disruptive. It wasn't extremely loud. When we're in the house, it's even less, right? I think that their use is fine. I don't find it noisy. I don't find it disruptive. I don't find there's a traffic issue. They people don't all leave and come at the same time. So it's not like there's a lot of cars on the road. I just think that they're doing a fine job being neighbors that are fine neighbors.
Thank you for your testimony, sir.
All right.
Do we have additional testimony from the public?
I have Martha Epley.
Sorry, I needed to unmute. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm Martha Epley. I live at 25620 Southwest Mountain Road. And I just want to speak, not necessarily specifically to this application, but I do want to comment on Eddie's emphasis on how noise or events can alter your use of your property, significantly alter it. There's been mention of the polo fields, and from personal experience, I have to share that that did significantly alter my use of my property. In the past, I had gardens and I enjoyed spending my weekends, which were the only time that I was available to me, working in my garden. After the polo fields began having events, I no longer had worked in my garden, and I gave that up because I used to be able to go out and enjoy listening to the birds and the donkeys and the cows and all of the wildlife that was in the valley. And after the polo fields came, all I listened to was the person calling the match and the music and the post party. So I just wanted to make that comment. Someone else mentioned about how sand travels, I believe it was Clay, in the valley, and that is so significant. I remember talking to a neighbor that lives, directly across from the polo fields, and they were not significantly bothered by the noise. I lived 400 yards away, and I could hear every single word that was spoken. So I just want to put that on the record to state that noise can significantly impact the use of and enjoyment of your property. And if I'm permitted, I do have a question. And that is, at what point is something considered an event? For example, if Anna has two other couples over for dinner, is that counted as one of the 15 events?
Who are you asking the question of?
Anybody that can answer.
Well, short answer is no. Obviously, you can have friends and family and whatnot over. We all do. When it becomes an event, I'm actually trying to find the definition for events under hosting events. If you give me just a second, I should be able to track it down.
Because I think in the case of Anna, if she has her family over, that's going to be, could be many, many people, far more than if I had my family over.
All right, hang on a second here. Let's see if we define this. I'm not sure we do. That's why I'm looking it up.
Well, while you're looking that up, I do want to make one other point, and that is that if the allowed number of events is, let's say, 15 per year, and again, I'm basing much of my comment on the polo field, and I realize that that is different, but it does apply in a way. That would essentially, if you had an event on Saturday and Sunday for every weekend in the summer, that would mean basically that that could impact the outdoor enjoyment of neighbors in the area for the entire summer.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yes. Which is what happened with...
May I comment?
Can I answer the question first? Because I happen to find a definition. We do define event when it comes to home occupation host events. And it's defined as a wedding, family reunion, class reunion, company picnic, or similar gathering. So it's still broad, but we do define it. And when it's done as a home occupation, that's when we get into all these dimensional limitations and other standards that we can apply to it. So that's the answer to the question that I have. How's that?
That's great. And I'm going to ask the applicant to address any rebuttal you have in the additional statements that you provide after the hearing. Written statements work great. I don't want to get into a back and forth with members of the public who just want to have their comment and testimony and their personal experience heard and considered. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Epley. Do we have an additional member of the public that wants to provide comment or testimony?
Yes, we have Jessica Hansen.
Am I unmuted now?
Here you go.
My name is Jessica Hansen. I'm at 4651 Southwest Homesteader Road. I am far away enough that I don't think I would be impacted from a sound standpoint. There's a grove of trees between us, and I was never impacted by the sounds of the polo fields. So just to kind of give that as a background, I was really just speaking to Anna's communication style. We have a really communicative neighborhood. We have an email list that goes out when anything from a creepy car pulls into a parking lot to a dog being missing. We are always communicating. We have neighborhood preparedness meetings. We have annual Christmas parties that are 40 years strong. And so I feel like this is a neighborhood where a lot of people have lived here for a long time, and they're very comfortable communicating with one another. And so having her family move into the neighborhood, I just want to say I was impressed by how she immediately addressed any concerns and was looking for feedback. And I thought it was unique that our neighborhood communicated so well, and to have her assimilate into the neighborhood so nicely, making sure that she wasn't making anybody mad, and that she went through the trouble. Like, frankly, it wouldn't even have occurred to me to look for a permit to have a family reunion, to be totally honest. Like, it's her property, and is making noise here and there seems like an appropriate use of the property. So I can't speak to being right next to her, but I just wanted to speak to her character and her willingness to communicate and make any changes and amend things. So I hope that she is able to do what she wants to. And again, it's not a business. She's just trying to share her property and her, you know, the blessings that she has with her church and her family. So I just want to support her with that.
Thank you for your comments and testimony. I'll certainly consider them as well. Do we have another member of the public present?
I have Chelsea Osland.
Can you hear me?
There you are.
Okay. Hey there. I had submitted some written testimony, but wanted to just jump on here really quick. I live at 25795 Southwest Newland Road. I would argue that the very reason people want to come to Anna's house is because of the natural scenic beauty and the peace of the area. I've been selling real estate for close to 18 years, and people move to the country for less stress, less traffic, less noise, and more privacy. These are comments consistent with every house I've sold in zone RRFF5. The events Anna has held over the years have been very loud, most of them, and the actual impacts of these events have negatively affected the use of enjoyment of my property. I can't speak to my neighbors, but this is based, and this is a fact based on experience, not assumption. We certainly don't mind a few events per year. We all have families and friends and want to share our homes with those we love, but the ability, I think, to hold multiple events, and potentially every weekend it's sunny outside, is just not conducive, in my opinion, to the character of the area, especially if the events are 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. That's also the time that your neighbors want to be outside enjoying their properties. And this is not a personal attack. I think Anna seems like a lovely person, and she has reached out to neighbors. But even if I trusted that she wouldn't allow noise that negatively affected the neighbors, I don't trust that she can control a group of 100 or 150 people. That's impossible. And there have been numerous events where she hasn't had full control of all the guests. I don't have the full list in front of me, but it's just a few examples. There were two events with illegal fireworks, not on the 4th of July. One was on Christmas Eve. That one woke up my children at 2 a.m., Again, this is an example of how it's hard to control everyone. I don't think Anna had any intentions. I think that she had mentioned to me those were teenagers, you know, that just, you know, did something that they made a mistake, but an example of a substantial impact. My child woke up screaming in fear on Christmas. You know, again, these aren't like the fireworks you buy at Fred Meyer's, but anyways, Anna's home site is also kind of in the low point. So there, the noise there actually echoes, which is, it's arguably kind of in the worst location for these type of events for that reason. And I want to be clear, a few large events per year that are respectful of the surrounding homes is totally fine with me. I think a good neighbor agreement is a great idea, but in my opinion, this permit and the volume of events that it would allow isn't warranted. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. And I will consider your comments as well. Do we have anyone else?
Yeah. I have Dolores Wilson.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is William George Wilson.
Okay.
I live at 3701.
And I'm Dolores Wilson. And he's talking for me.
Okay.
We live at 3701 Homesteader Road. We are an adjacent neighbor to Anna. My wife and I submitted our written declaration, which was incorporated into the record as Exhibit 10. We request that our declaration be admitted into the record in this proceeding. I do not intend to repeat the statements in our declaration, but I want to give you some background on our situation. We purchased our property November 16th, 2020. We shopped for a year and a half for a suitable residence with acreage that was properly zoned so we could enjoy our home. We also needed property that was zoned farm and forestry for our animals. It was important to us that we live in an area zoned primary residential, but also farm and forest activities. We were looking for this type of zoning because we wanted a quiet, peaceful residential community. We did not want commercial activities going on right around us. We were shocked when we got the notice of a public hearing on land use in our area on March 26, 2021. This would change the atmosphere of the neighborhood from residential farm to a commercial destination site. In a residential setting, large commercial events are inappropriate and disruptive to the neighborhood for the reasons we stated in our letter. At any single event, there could be anywhere from 100 to 150 strangers less than 300 feet from my front door to the back of Anna's house. Even though we both have 6 acres, 300 feet is not a big distance between two homes. We explained in our declaration that the intended commercial use of the Petra's property has altered the character of the surrounding area in a manner that substantially limits, impairs, or precludes the use of surrounding properties for the primary use allowed in zoning districts. Parties of 120 people will inevitably disrupt the ambience of the neighborhood, impose restrictions on the residents and enjoyment of their property, frighten animals and cause dangerous traffic situations. Overall, this proposal introduces chaotic disturbance to our neighborhood and violates multiple zoning codes. We understand that Anna had at least 17 events last year without a permit. I understand that Anna was cited by the county for operating a commercial business without a conditional use permit. Even after being cited, Anna continued to hold events, most recently in April 2021. Anna's conditional use permit should not be granted based on a history of disruptive prior events, unsuitability of the property, size, location, and close proximity to our residents, prevention of enjoyment of our property, disturbance of animals, and the creation of a dangerous traffic hazard. We would not have purchased the property that we live on had we been aware of their commercial events on Anna's property. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm assuming that Dolores Wilson agrees with the testimony that you just provided.
Yes, yes, I do. And the property where the barn is and where their proposed new site, new building is, and their house is very close within, you know, over the fence from the pasture where my horse and hopefully some other horses had planned to be.
Okay, thank you. Horse, got it. Okay, and I will consider the commentary and testimony you each provided. And I can see the area that we're talking about. Okay. Is there another member of the public who is seeking to participate?
I have Bob Blessing.
Okay.
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Very good. Okay, this is Bob Blessing. I'm sitting here with my wife, Lynn, and we reside at 3505 Southwest Homesteader, immediately west of the property of this conditional use permit request. And one of the things that I really wanted to bring to everyone's attention is that part of the proposal that the Petruses are, you know, working towards is adding a parking lot that would occupy what is currently a pasture that is immediately adjoining our property. And, you know, that in and of itself is a pretty substantial impact because we have a flag lot with a long driveway that we walk our dogs, that we take our grandkids down. And, you know, the notion of having a parking lot with 30 or 40 or what, however many cars coming and going, people meeting and greeting each other, you know, as they arrive or as they depart is pretty intrusive. The other thing that I think has kind of been alluded to is these are family events, and we're very family oriented people ourselves, and we don't want to impede the Petruses' ability to do, you know, basic family events. That's just, you know, good, healthy living. I think the issue here though is the frequency. If we're talking about 15 events per year, and if they were actually, you know, spread out over the course of a year, the impact would be pretty minimal. But the reality is that those 15 events are really likely to take place during the good weather months around here. And that is a small window. So now all of a sudden you have a frequency of events that, even though they're not commercial, they have a similar impact, even though they're just family events. So those are just a couple of considerations that I would that I would like, you know, the committee to consider. And, you know, in terms of like how big these are going to be, it seems like, you know, the numbers seem to be kind of moving around a little bit. I think it would be helpful to have a better understanding of, you know, what that really is going to be. If it's 100 people, you know, my question honestly would be, why do you need to pave a pasture for additional parking? 100 people, you're maybe talking 30 cars or so on average. And they've already had multiple events of that size, you know, without this additional parking. So, I don't know. Those are just a couple of our concerns. There certainly has been some history. I think Anna's, you know, made some adjustments and she's tried to be a good neighbor. I think they're very good people. Our concern is it's not personal. It's just that the impact to the local area. And I understand people that are not real close may not have the same level of impact, but when we're right next door, it feels very significant. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I will consider your comments. And I'm assuming that Lynn Blessing concurs in the statements you made.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do we have additional members of the public?
I have Kathy Luton.
Okay.
I don't know where she went. Wait. Sorry, she's jumping around in this.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Well, my name is Kathy Luton and I live at 4220 Southwest Homesteader. And I've lived here for 44 years. And pretty much I know everybody because I'm the neighborhood rep to the county for the Far West Clackamas County Neighborhood Association. So in this particular incident, I'm not personally impacted by the noise, but I hear from everybody, which is my sort of job. And I just hope that we can come up with a decent compromise because it is true that the disruption, stress, anxiety that it caused, that noise causes to the immediate surroundings to this particular property is not a good thing. So I hope that we could come up with like, you know, we've talked about the good neighbor agreement, but, and along with that, if there are a number of events that are permitted, that there be a way that the immediate neighbors would be given reasonable notification, whether it be 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever that requires. Because then if they know there's going to be a big event on a Saturday that they were, you know, planning to be outside, they could decide to go to the beach or something, whatever. That's what I used to do when different events would happen in the past. They would get notification. And if I didn't think I wanted to deal with the noise or traffic, then we would leave for the day. But also one thing that has not been mentioned is, yes, we all have families. I too come from a huge family. But one of the things that Anna's request is for church events. And I don't know how that changes the status of and the size of these events. And so, especially if there is going to be a large church event, that should require notification or wedding or whatever, and within the limited amount that are allowed. But I really hope this can be worked out in a reasonable way so that everybody can still enjoy their property and not feel anxiety and stress from events, and we can continue to get along as the great neighborhood that we've been for so many decades.
That's good to hear. Did you have something further to add, Ms. Luton?
Well, mostly that if whatever you decide is appropriate use, that along with that, that there be required notification to neighbors for anything above, I don't know, a certain number. What I don't know what your number is, like they were saying, what is considered a event. But so that immediate neighbors know that, okay, there's going to be an event on this date, but not on this Saturday, but Sunday's free or whatever. Because it does affect your psyche and you get anxious thinking, oh, there's going to be all these people. Especially if you don't know and you wake up one morning, you think you're going to have this nice time out in your yard. And all of a sudden there's, you know, you hear the noise of anywhere from 30, 50 to 100 people. That doesn't seem like a reasonable thing to expect when you're living out here in the beautiful country. But yes, it is okay to have a few events, but then people need to be notified. And that was initially, even with the polo field, they were supposed to only be a limited number of events, but then suddenly there'd be soccer events and every other thing that we didn't even get notification for. And yes, a lot of it didn't affect me personally, but it affected my neighbors here, my friends, and the people who moved here for country life. And like I say, many of us have been here for 40 years plus. So that needs to be respected, I think. So
thank you for your commentary and testimony. And I don't know exactly what happened with the polo field, but it sounds like it did have an impact.
Oh, it did.
Are there other members of the public? Oh, Mr. Glasgow he's got his hand up to make a comment. You're muted. Mr. Glasgow.
You're mute. There you go. How's that? Okay, so just so, because the polo fields have been mentioned a couple of times, let me just show you where that is again. I shared it at the beginning, but just to remind everybody, this is the subject property for today's meeting. This is what's been referred to as a polo fields over here, which has frankly been a long-running violation with the county. Also mentioned has been this property here, which is adjacent across the street. Well, kitty corner across the street. This is the castle. This has an approved home occupation to host events conditional use on it. That's been done apparently within the last year. I lost track of time. But this is the polo fields. That's it.
Okay.
I'm going back on.
Let me back up. Is the polo field, I had the impression it was a privately operated venture. Is that, you don't have to answer.
Well, it's been used for a variety of things, from hosting events to soccer games to actual polo matches. And just for years, it's been that, and it just kind of showed up. And then had been trying to catch up the whole time with violation files on it.
Okay. That's a different matter than you're saying there's not a approved conditional use of the property, though.
No.
Thank you. Not an approved use. I'll have to consider that. There was a lot of testimony about the impact of the polo field. But if that's not an approved use and not really similar to the applicant's use, then I'm not sure.
Well, and I think even one of the commenters mentioned that, you know, that kind of put the entire neighborhood on alert or made everybody more sensitive to Anna's use here with hosting events.
I can see exactly how that would happen. But thank you for the description that it's not an approved use and that the county is working to resolve it as a violation of the county's zoning. Okay. Oh. I just want to straighten it out of my notes real quickly. Thank you. Do we have another member of the public?
Yes, I have Chelsea Oslin's hand up again.
I think, did that individual already provide?
Yes.
Let's move. Do we have someone else? Everyone that wants to provide commentary for to be considered can submit it, as was stated, to the county. And I will receive those documents and consider it. I'm trying to provide a single opportunity for individuals to provide testimony and comments this morning. But you're welcome to provide written comments in addition. Do we have someone who hasn't had that chance yet?
I have Lois.
I see Lois is still muted.
Darcy, you've unmuted Lois, but she's muted on her side there.
Yes, I've asked her to unmute.
Okay.
Let's give Lois a moment. Not everyone's familiar with the use of this platform. And
yeah, Lois, if you look in the upper right-hand portion of your box that has your face on it, there's going to be a mute, unmute button up there. It's blue. Or not.
Perhaps we could come back to Lois I don't have your full name, I apologize, but if you're unable to unmute your microphone, then you're still welcome to provide a written commentary for my consideration. Do we have another member of the public?
This I do not see any additional hands.
This is your chance to do it.
Well, let's give Lois an additional moment since she's the last person.
Yeah, Lois, honestly, just the upper right portion of the box that has you in it, there's a blue button, a little blue bar that says mute or unmute. And you are muted, and it's muted there at your computer, not here.
Well, let's move forward. Lois will have the same opportunity as other members of the public to submit additional written materials to be considered in this decision. Does the county have any additional, any rebuttal of the testimony that was provided or additional evidence for me to consider here?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a no on that. This has been a good discussion this morning. I would like to point out, and I think you're going to do this anyway, but if for no other reason than the fact that Anna only got the staff report last evening, record be left open. And I think you've already talked about one week, but
I did. I had already decided it was the only appropriate way to proceed when I learned that she hadn't had an opportunity in advance to really see the staff report. I don't know what happened there. It seems to me that you're indicating the county provided it as your procedure, but that she just wasn't aware of it.
I just didn't know it existed online, and I didn't get it directly through email or mail. But I, until Eddie mentioned it to me last night, I didn't know it existed. I apologize if it was available online.
My view is that members of applicants such as yourself, this may be the first time you've ever submitted an application. You're not as familiar with the process, and I think that it's perfectly reasonable to expect that I would need to give you additional time to see something like that if you weren't aware of it. So I think it's the right thing to do. So, Ms. Petras, did you have something additional you wanted to say in rebuttal to any of the comments, or do you just want to include that in your written materials that you submit also in response to the staff report?
Yeah, I think I'm going to submit a written to everybody, but just in general, while everyone's still possibly listening, I know I want to mention again to the comments that the 15 events are excessive. I just kind of did like, of course, I just applied for the maximum that I thought in my head. Again, I want to reiterate, if for those of you that weren't on when I originally started and spoke, my husband and I travel 1 month out of the year in the middle of the summer. So this is not something that I want to do every single weekend during the summer. I agree with you guys. I don't want that either. So I just kind of did a little sketch really quick. And I was thinking, you know, one in March, one in April, and then two, and two. That would be the maximum. And that only adds up to like 12. If I was going to do two in May, two in June, two in July, two a month. And that only adds up to 12. So it's not something that I want to do every single weekend and disrupt everybody's weekend. I don't want you guys to have to leave or disrupt me. My lifestyle too. It's just, that's one thing that I want to comment on. And then the other thing that I want to comment on really quick for everybody, because it seems like it keeps coming up. And these are the types of exaggeration that I think, again, we need to be transparent as neighbors. You know, when a couple people brought up the illegal fireworks, as if I was doing that at some sort of an event, or it was, we moved in October of 2019, and every single year since I've been married, since 1999, the youth come over for caroling. In our Romanian tradition, that's what they do. They go caroling. And we had in December and Christmas Eve carolers at our house. And it's true, when you have a bunch of teenagers on the property, you don't know what somebody's going to do. And one of them lit a firework. I've emailed all the neighbors. I've apologized for it. And it wasn't even me. It wasn't something it wasn't an event. They just came over caroling that night on Christmas Eve. So I apologize, Chelsea, for your kids, you know, being disrupted. I apologize, Lynn, for your horses being disrupted. But it's not, it comes across as if like I'm doing these events and I'm allowing fireworks, and that's not at all what is going on. And again, yeah, that's one thing that I want to, and another thing with this,
I do recognize the distinction. Anyone can own property, and someone can do something on the property that is very disruptive. And I see that it's not necessarily related to your application.
Yeah.
I understand the distinction.
And then just the last thing that I want to say is I am very well aware that the fear of COVID and the limiting gatherings as it is, as a whole in 2020, was just very fearful and anxiety. And, you know, and I chose towards the end of the year not to live in that fear. And that was my lifestyle. And that's what I choose to live. I don't want to die in closed in the house and living in fear. But I also don't want to be a disruption. But I could see how the COVID and then the fires quality, you know, that Grant mentioned earlier, the fires and the quality and us being outside. I did mention in my early comment, my friend Ruben, whose wedding was canceled 3 times. We were at a level 1, not a level 2, like Grant mentioned. We were at a level 1, but Oregon City went to a level 2. So the Abernathy Center, which where they were scheduled, just the day before canceled them. And this was the 3rd time. So he called me. He grew up under my care and in the youth choir. And I said, yeah, come on over. I mean, I understand the air quality was bad, but I don't know what that has to do with people wanting to be, you know, outside, if that's, they need to have a, you know, I don't know. I don't want to keep talking about that, but, and then lastly, I know, Eddie emphasized a lot of indoor. I think what we mean by that is that the activity, the you know, if they're going to have music, it's going to be indoor, enclosed. But people are going to be coming out to get their food. I mean, it's not like when I have gatherings, you're not going to see people. They're all going to be enclosed in that barn and you're not going to see people on the property. So I want to clarify that as well. And then the other comments that each person mentioned, I will write. And I think those were the big ones.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I'll look for a written statement from you. And to clarify, you can attach additional information as you want. Provide that directly to the county. The county will forward that to me. The county is welcome to do the same. And each of you will have an opportunity to review those materials submitted by members of the public and to respond as well. So the record's open for 3 weeks, 1 week for those statements, 1 week to review and rebut each other's, and an additional week for the rebuttal statements or responsive statements. Okay. Are there any questions about that? All right. Then I will leave the record open for that 21-day period. And at the end of that period, I will receive and review the additional written statements that were submitted to the record, all of which will be a part of the record. And I'll issue a written decision following that. My written decision will be within 20 days of that 21-day period. I think I've made an understandable statement about the record and the timing of my written decision. My experience would be to expect it well before that, the end of that 20-day period for writing it. Okay? All right. Thank you all for your participation.
And I've put the slide up again that shows where you can submit testimony to, either email or snail mail. That's fine.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
You don't want to get it to me. Just remember the 777 that the hearings officer described and the process there. And thanks, everybody, for showing up and being part of the process.